internal migration in South Africa. Nosipho Hlatshwayo is the Executive Manager of Programs at the South African Cities Network. Nosipho, good morning. Thanks for your time.
A very good morning to you.
So we've already heard how people are moving around. We've heard how people come to the cities that haven't planned for them. Do cities actually have the capacity to plan for people who are moving to the cities?
So there's a lot of plans or legislative instruments that should assist cities to plan for migration. And these have been instituted and are actually utilized by municipalities to ensure that they not only plan for today, they plan for the future as well. And we also seeing in the bigger cities that long-range planning being instituted, where cities are not only looking at what's going to happen if there's a trend of semi-migration, but they're looking at 10, 15 years to determine how should they be moving forward as cities in planning for not only migration, but planning for the economy, socially and environmentally as well.
Are they implementing the plans? I mean, we know that people are moving to the cities, and we know that in many cases they have no choice but to live in an informal settlement, which, I mean, who would want to do that? People wouldn't want to do that. They're doing that because they have no choice.
So cities are implementing their plans, and in fact, the law requires them to implement their plans. But there's two things that maybe we need to talk about when we talk about migration and how cities are implementing their plans. It's one, the effectiveness of the implementation of that particular plan. If you think about if you're planning for 10 years or you're planning for 15 years, and with the changes that happen administratively and politically in these cities in the 10 and the 15 years, sometimes there's a disturbance in the actual implementation of the plan. So that's the one thing that is of concern on how cities are currently being managed, where you might not realize a very good plan over time because there's been those changes. And then the second thing is when we talk about where people then move to, when they come to the cities, and it becomes tricky for those city practitioners who are given a task of long-range planning and managing where people live, is we think about the three areas where people move to. They move to facilitated spaces, which is like your rental property markets. Then the created spaces where people just decide to set up informal settlements, no planning having been done, or in existing informal settlements, some of them having been there for years, but there isn't actually resources to upgrade them. And then the third space is those bought spaces. So we're talking about accessibility now to buying and living in these spaces. We're finding that there is an issue with these three categories of spaces where migrants move into cities because, first of all, there isn't enough for everyone who moves into cities to access these, even if they are, in the case of your bought spaces, your property market, accessibility to it is not really great because of various factors, including the pricing of these. We don't have a lot in your entry market to allow people to be able to access comfortable and suitable living conditions. And that is why you do find some of them then end up in these creative spaces in the informal settlement while they are servicing those people who are in the formal areas.
We also have another dynamic where middle-class people who can work from home because they do it all on a computer, they may be moving away from bigger cities to other places. So what impact is that going to have on these cities?
So two things. It's a great thing for the smaller towns where these people are moving to because, remember, they bring the buying power, number one. Number two, they'll be paying for rates and services in the smaller towns. In the bigger towns, depending on the type of migration that we're talking about, if it's semi-migration where a person is just saying, I'm going to keep my house in a big city, but I will choose to work in a smaller city at particular times, it doesn't upset the market. It also does not upset that much the revenue of municipalities. Where we get particularly concerned is where we find permanent movement of people from cities to other areas to towns, because it means that there is a loss of revenue for those municipalities, not only in terms of just paying for your property rates or buying electricity and paying for water and waste, but also in terms of the fact that these people are participating in the circular economy, and that buying power is then lost in these areas. And we also find also what is being contributed in this is when people move, often people that are servicing them, so you can think about people that are doing garden services, people that are domestic workers, for an example, in some instances, they'll be left without jobs, and thus contributing immensely on joblessness in our cities. So those are some of the challenges as we talk about migration. Those are some of the issues that we need to start thinking about.
Councils also almost always have a system where, for example, if you are indigent, you get a certain amount of free electricity. That free electricity is paid for by the people who are not indigent, so the richer people, because they use more electricity and therefore they pay more to use that electricity. So I'm presuming there would also be an impact on the finances of councils if richer people left, and that would mean that there would actually be less money to pay for services for everybody.
Most certainly. But I think the big question is, it's about the shrinking middle class in general, whether there is migration or no migration. With the fact that we're not creating jobs at the rate that we are generating people that are entering the job market. And what then this does is that you've got fewer people that are then subsidizing the majority of the people who are either not working or are not earning enough to be paying for these services. So your subsidization scheme that happens in municipality is hugely impacted by this. But what then it means for cities is that we need to start thinking about, in terms of the fiscal reforms, which are regulated by National Treasury, looking at how monies are dispersed to cities, because if the trend continues, then it means that this pressure is going to grow in cities. Should we think about ensuring that how we appropriate the funds to municipality, it is reflective of the realities that cities are being faced with, number one. Number two, we need to also think about the real cost of delivering the services. Because an alternative would be, yes, people still need to have water, still need to have electricity. Let's just up the tariffs for those that can afford it so that they can subsidize. No, that's not sustainable. You need to look at what are the cost drivers for delivering these services and make sure that you bill people according to what it costs to render that service. And then the other amount of money can then be utilized for subsidization. Cities can also look at alternative revenue streams. And I know the popular thing right now, we're talking about the green economy, we're talking about sustainability. It's about time that cities start looking at how can they make money out of those new entrants into the economy to make sure that they're not just relying on property rates and on selling electricity and distributing water, but they increase the pool from which they get the money to provide services.
Nosipho Hlatshwayo, thanks very much indeed, Executive Manager of Programs at the South African Cities Network. In a moment, what all of this means for the future of work. We'll speak to the partner at Flux Trends, Bronwyn Wilkinson. You with SAFM. Your mediated conversation will continue 8 minutes to 9.